name is number one, desirable. I do what I want when I want and how I want it. Leave you with the one.
Miss Audrey K. Ross. Now, not only is Audrey an elite-level figure competitor, she is also a huge health and wellness advocate, focusing primarily on disordered eating and body image issues, as well as battling anxiety and depression. And we talk about all of those things in great detail, but there are a couple of things that stood out to me. Number one, this concept and unfortunate truth that every single woman can remember a time where they became consciously aware of their body, and usually for worse. Usually it creates some sort of that lasts a lifetime. Maybe it's a comment from a boy. Maybe it's a comment from a parent or a teacher or a mentor or a coach. Maybe it's scrolling through the internet and fumbling upon Pornhub and checking out all of the porn stars and the way that they look. But nonetheless, there is this tipping point in every woman's life where they become aware of their body and how imperfect their body is. And oftentimes it does create that insecurity. And we talk at great length about that, things to do as parents and mentors and coaches to help avoid this inevitable process with women. But the other thing that really intrigued me about this conversation was about halfway through, it became very that Audrey is what's called a highly sensitive person. And the reason I was able to identify that is because I am a highly sensitive person myself. What is a highly sensitive person? Who senses on a deeper level than most people. So if you've ever heard somebody tell you, why do you have to be so sensitive? Or if you've ever felt like you're picking up on little subtleties in a room full of people that not everybody is picking up on. If you feel like you're a little bit more sensitive to noise, if you feel like you're a little bit more sensitive to touch, to light, to your overall surroundings, then chances are you are a highly sensitive person. And about 20% of the population has this characteristic or this trait. It is often associated with being an introvert. However, not everybody who's a highly sensitive person is an introvert. And it comes from a doctor by the name of Elaine Aron, and she wrote a book called The Highly Sensitive Person. And she's a psychiatrist research on this trait, that it was about 20% of the human population, and many other species out there have this trait, and you're just more aware of those subtleties. I like to think of it as my world is kind of, the volume is just a little bit higher than most people. I do feel like I pick up on certain things that not everybody does, and I feel like it's kind of a superpower. However, it is that it can exhaust you very, very quickly. So after a long day at work where I'm surrounded by a lot of light, a lot of noise, and a lot of people, although I consider myself an extrovert, Shannon likes to call me the most introverted extrovert she's ever met. And really what she's getting at is that I'm an extremely highly sensitive person who's also an extrovert. And it can be me not to overextend myself, not to give too much of my energy to people, because I'm also a very curious and extroverted person. But at the same time, I need to recharge my battery by being alone and being in silence and just kind of decompressing. Now, if any of this is ringing true to you, I strongly urge you to check out the book called The Highly Sensitive Person by Dr. Elaine Aron, and she dives into this. I've recommended this book to a handful of people, and everybody that I've recommended it to said they couldn't get through the first chapter without crying. And so, you don't necessarily need to be a sensitive, emotionally sensitive person to be a highly sensitive person, although it sometimes, or I should say oftentimes, it goes hand in hand with being a highly sensitive person. So anyway, give that book a shot. You can go to the website. It's hsperson.com, and check out the book. I think that you would find it very, very interesting if any of that stuff is ringing a bell, or if you know somebody who that's ringing a bell for you. But anyway, about halfway through my conversation with Audrey, it became very apparent that she was a highly sensitive person. And it was really fun to pick her brain simply because we have that common characteristic. Where can you find Audrey? She primarily communicates with her fans on Instagram. That's at Audrey K. Ross. K is spelled out, K-A-Y. That's Audrey K. Ross on Instagram. And without further ado, here is my conversation with 2018 Miss Arkansas figure gold medalist Audrey K. Ross.
You might do better in a bigger city where no one knows all your secrets.
Right. And that's exactly what I was thinking too. Cause like a part of me really, cause I'm from the Bay Area and it's like, I never see the same person twice as well. And it's like a part of me likes the idea of living in a small town where everybody's kind of in a community. You know, if you need some help, they're willing to help you. Like, dude, if you got a flat tire on a busy road out here, like you're on your fucking own. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like where like maybe a small town, like somebody would stop and help and like assist you. Like, so, but at the same time, I know that like, if you make, let's just say one small mistake or you do something that maybe you're not proud of, everybody freaking knows. Right?
That's one of the reasons. That's why my parents moved from Oklahoma, a little bit of a background. My brother, while I love him so much, he made a lot of bad mistakes and got in trouble with the law and is paying the consequences for that. But that happened while we were living in Fort Gibson. And so, you know, my mom couldn't go to the grocery store without people asking and saying things like, oh, we're praying for your brother. Well, I don't give a shit if you're praying for, you know, like, stop talking about it. It's none of your business, you know, and they wanted to ask questions. And so it was really hard on my family during that time when those things happened. So I think they just wanted a fresh start. And also, I mean, the career outlook is also better here for what my parents do. And so, you know, it was just kind of silly to stay in place there where everything was kind of just negative and just really hard on us as a family. So,
yeah, that's fascinating. So did you think that wanting to go the complete opposite route of your brother, do you think that guided you into the figure competition that you are in today? I mean, how did that start? Tell us the story about how like you got into figure and bodybuilding and just diet, nutrition, and exercise.
Yeah. So I think, I don't know if my brother was kind of one of the causes of my bodybuilding career. I think it was more of like, that's when I really started to develop a sense of myself and like I became really aware of my body. And I started out at a small Christian university in Edmond, Oklahoma. And I didn't have any friends because I wasn't like, they were just very cliquey. If you didn't come from money, if you didn't have a certain background, you were an outcast basically. If you didn't practice your faith the same way they did, then, you know, it's just a small private university where everyone knew everyone. And I kind of secluded myself. And the only thing I had was going to the gym every day. And I wanted something that kind of set me apart too. I'm a very goal-oriented person, so not having something to focus on really derailed me. And I didn't care about school at that time. I was a biology major, like that just wasn't for me. I was just trying to do what I thought other people wanted me to do. And so I don't know. I kind of just wanted something to work towards that didn't have anything to do with school because it wasn't going well for me. Mm-hmm. That really it was only me, like only me as a person that allowed me to become successful in that. So that's really the thing that I chose for myself.
So that didn't happen until college.
Right. Yeah. I was a competitive swimmer in high school. So I've always been an athlete. But then when I got into college, I remember like I didn't really have anything, you know, I needed something. And having a team all the time around you, going from that to nothing, it was hard for me. So I had to figure out what I wanted to do. So that's kind of what I chose. I just started following all these fitness accounts and everything like that. And just really getting into the bodybuilding side of things. I didn't really compete, like plan to compete at all until like maybe I was a sophomore in college. Mm-hmm. It wasn't in my initial plan starting out. I never thought it'd be something I'd do.
What point did you make that transition into like, hey, this is kind of a cool hobby. I'm seeing some results, kind of getting into this. And then all of a sudden, like, boom, you're on stage and winning some state competitions, correct?
Yeah, definitely didn't start very big. I started in a natural federation. Like I said, my sophomore year of college, people started noticing. They were like, wow, you are like getting really fit. Like you're losing a lot of weight, like you're getting muscle and things like that. And so like, I really didn't like the attention that I was getting from it. I know that sounds bad, but it's true. And so I think at that point I was like, you know, maybe this could be something that I could do, get my feet in the water. Like I didn't plan on taking it as far as it's gone. That's for sure. Like I started out in the bikini division, which is like, no offense to any bikini competitors listening, but it's kind of just like a princessy division for me. And I didn't have the personality for it. I felt like a pageant princess more than an athlete, which is totally a personal thing. I'm sure other bikini competitors feel differently and that's fine. But it's just like, it wasn't for me.
I've had a bikini competitor on and she referred to the figure competitors as like the beasts.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, not like in size, but like in...
It's like the personality almost. Like you can't just... bikini requires you to be very dainty and a certain shape. And my legs were just more dominant than the bikini division wanted. So I started out that way and just kind of got a taste for the environment itself. But I didn't even place in my first show. Like I said, they told me like, your legs are too big. Like it's not proportionate with your body. Like you should take the time to curl your upper body and see what you can do in the figure division because I had a better frame for it. You know, I'm short, I'm only 5'3". Mm-hmm. So it really worked out better for me and my personality. Like a bikini kind of encompasses everything. Like you kind of just have to, like I said, it's like a pageant almost.
And it's got to be pretty rough. I mean, you already kind of touched on, you know, your legs not being symmetrical or being bigger than your upper body. Yeah. I had actually literally about 10 days ago or so, I just had this conversation with a guy at my gym and he's got some really well-developed calves, like some shit that you would see on the cover of a magazine or something, right? And as I'm looking at them, I'm like, yeah, but your left one's way bigger than the right one. And it like never dawned on me that like that was the case, right? Obviously, like bodybuilding, figure, whatever you're, you know, when you're on stage, people are looking at you and they are looking at you with a fine tooth comb. And nobody, you know, if you're standing in line at Starbucks or something like, and you see somebody in front of you wearing shorts, like you're never going to think twice about their calves, right? But if you're actually looking, very rarely are people symmetrical. That has to be really, really tough on you as a competitor. Like talk about what that's done to your psyche, how you've handled that emotionally, and how that's trickled into your day-to-day life.
Well, going from one extreme just to back to a normal life, if it's okay to not be perfectly like in shape for stage all the time has been probably the hardest thing I've ever had to do recently. You know, the judges, they have a trained eye for this. They're looking for those imbalances. They're looking for those balances. They're wanting to see what sets you apart from the people who are next to you. That's how you win a show. And so, you know, you have to be your own harshest critic. You have to know what your weak points are and work at them and not just ignore them. So I think, but yeah, part of going back to that mentality of it's okay to just look average and not look phenomenal all the time is totally hard for me because I am a woman of extremes. And so it's just like, I gotta relax. Like that's my biggest thing. I need to learn how to relax. You can ask my coach, like for the first maybe 4 months of my off season, this past off season, I would text him like every week, like we need to do a mini cut or we need to bulk up a little bit more. Like we need to push food. Like, oh no, I want to tailor back. Like I'm getting a little thick. Like, you know, it's just, and he'd be like, shut the fuck up, Audrey. Like,
yeah.
Tired of this. Like just pick something. And so that's when I finally just decided, you know what? I'm only doing this because I'm trying to push the stage again. And I'm just not ready. Like I just need to take time off and heal my mindset first.
Interesting. Yeah. And since then you have recently discovered some things about yourself, correct? With your recent diagnosis of cyclothymic disorder. Mm-hmm. Talk about that. And for those who don't know, my general understanding of that is that it's kind of like a mini bipolar, if you will, where mm-hmm. you have some very common or maybe some, I wouldn't say scheduled, but you frequently have bouts of some mild depression followed by some hypomanic states mm-hmm. where, you know, you're extremely excitable, maybe are all of a sudden very, very motivated, not quite a full manic. Like from my understanding back in college, I remember my professor goes, manic phase, guy running down the street naked. He goes, hypomanic, somebody who just doesn't sleep for a day or two. You know what
basically,
I mean?
Like, yeah.
So talk about your recent discovery of this, and has this always been something that you've battled?
No. Growing up, I was a lot more flexible with things. You know, I didn't really have those up and downs just because I didn't care about the things that I care about now as far as health and fitness goes. And like, I didn't have the body image issues that I kind of do now and things like that. But cyclothymia kind of, so it's like, it's alternating states of hypomania and depression. It's a very elated state. It can be euphoric, but most of the time it's just very like shaky adrenaline feeling, like I need to go do this and this and this, and I have this to do. And you can get in trouble by going out and spending a bunch of money, just making plans that you know later you won't want to commit to when you're back to reality, you know, which is normal for a lot of people, but it's just like, yeah, I don't know, it's crazy. And then the depression states, so these I feel a lot more than the hypomanic states. While I have been hypomanic pretty frequently in the past few days, the depression, I think I had thought that I was just in a seasonal depression, which is super normal for a lot of people. Just in December is kind of when I really went through a extended depression. I wouldn't categorize it as like super depressive. Like I never thought about suicide or anything like that. It was just more of just like, I don't have anything going for me right now. Like I don't feel motivated to do anything. It was just very a lonely and isolating time for me. I didn't respond to any messages. Like my parents were just like, who are you? You know? So yeah, but I've definitely developed a lot of coping skills recently for it. And I've been going to therapy maybe once or twice a month, just to kind of talk about things. It's really nothing you can cure, but if you're not managing it, then it can definitely progress into bipolar 1 disorder, which is basically the parent of cyclothymic disorder.
Yeah, so it leads me to my next thought, which is we all go through those ups and downs. Some people who live in certain states that are maybe super rainy or super cold or whatever, we go through those seasonal type bouts. What are some things that you would suggest somebody listening who may be going through some of these things? At what point would you recommend them going to see a professional to seek out treatment on this? Is there like a certain amount of days that you spent in bed? Is there a certain thing that might be a little bit different than your traditional, like, hey, I'm just not feeling motivated today?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's super normal to have that, you know, seasonal, just like that, like today sucks type of feeling. There is a difference. You know, it's kind of when you just feel like, you know, there's really no hope or anything like that, or things aren't going to get better, or you don't look forward to anything, or like you're not taking care of yourself like you should. I think that's when you should really start having that talk with yourself and saying, okay, these things are beyond my help. There's really nothing I can do for myself at this point. I can't just talk myself out of this. It's kind of just like I wake up this way and I go to bed this way. Mm-hmm. That's when you really need to be honest with yourself and seek outside help, which was really hard for me to do because I am very independent and I don't like others helping me really. I like to do things on my own. I like to fix things on my own. So, but it definitely helped. I'm glad I took that step. It's hard to be vulnerable for sure, but you know, the first step is definitely always the hardest. So.
Were you training regularly? How was your diet? Can you look back on certain things that you do in the gym, in your nutrition, with your sleep? You know, are there certain things that factor into your mood and how these ups and downs go?
Yeah. So that was one of the ways that I managed it, was staying consistent with my training and my nutrition. I didn't really have problems with sleep. But at the same time, like I did have a lot of anxiety going on. So the only thing that I did have going for me that I felt like was my training and my nutrition and my consistency in that. So that was my comfort. But it never really affected that, just because that's my lifestyle. I don't make it a choice to skip the gym, really. Like, it's not even a thought in my head. It's just like, this is part of my day, no matter how I'm feeling, because I just, you know, going through three competition preps, that's just, it's easy. Like, you don't think twice about it. So it's just like, that was a good thing for me. But usually my depressive symptoms would hit the hardest at nighttime. Just because everyone kind of battles their demons at nighttime when everything's trying to quiet down for the day. You finished your last meal. Like, you're just like, well, I'm by myself. Like, there's nothing to do. Like, it was the holidays, so I didn't have anything to focus on with school, which was, so definitely being busy is what keeps me from feeling these things. I think is the best thing for me, is just like keeping myself busy.
Yeah, it's
so super. When I'm not, it's just like,
it can be scary. You're familiar with a group or band called 21 Pilots? Yeah.
Yeah.
You've heard of them. They've got a song called Car Stereo. Have you heard of it?
Okay. No, I don't think I have.
All right. So essentially what it boils down to is his car radio got stolen out of his car, and now he's left to drive in silence. And he hates driving now because he usually cranks up his music. Now he's left with nothing but his thoughts, and it is fucking scary. And
that's like perfect.
Right. It reminds me of what you were kind of explaining. And one of the things that I've just found very, very helpful in my day-to-day life is to attempt to be in silence as much as I possibly can. Mm-hmm. That way I'm forced to be really in tune with my body. That way I'm forced to be in tune with my feelings and emotions without any external factor. Do you implement any of that into your day-to-day life? What other types of coping mechanisms do you use to help combat these ups and downs?
Well, during December, I picked up on adult coloring, which, if anyone's listening, that was a great way to kind of just check out. It might sound like, oh, you color? Like, yeah, fuck yeah. You should see some of the things I color when I'm fucking depressed. It's like, fucking, I can sell it and make money off of it. It's beautiful. But it's funny you ask, because I actually bought a Nintendo DS a few days ago.
That's the old school one, right?
Oh, yeah. It's not a Game Boy. It's like, I mean, they came out with a new version in maybe 2017. But so I've been picking up on gaming lately at nighttime after just everything for the day. So my mind isn't, wandering. So that's fun. And then I also like to go on walks. I go on walks a lot with my roommate's dog, Ollie. And it's just kind of, I listen to podcasts and everything like that. So it's kind of my me time. I find that I'm just very selfish these days when I cope with this kind of stuff. You kind of have to be more than usual, because like, if your cup is empty, then you can't really provide for someone else. You can't give someone else like your energy when you have none to give. So I really want to be more authentic with other people, and but that requires me retracting and being able to recognize, hey, this is my limit for the day. I really need to slow down. I really need to turn my phone off. I really need to go do this or this.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. It's a very fascinating thing about external stimulation. I would consider myself I'm kind of complicated when it comes to, am I an introvert? Am I an extrovert? Mm-hmm. Some people who know me on a very intimate level would consider me a very introverted person. People who know me on the surface might think that I'm very extroverted. Right. Have you ever heard of a book called The Highly Sensitive Person?
That sounds very familiar. I've never read it, but it does sound familiar.
Yeah, I've read it a couple of times, and it really speaks to me a lot, because it doesn't classify people as introverts or extroverts. It classifies them by somebody who is very sensitive to their surroundings. Now, you might think the title highly sensitive person means somebody who cries if somebody insults them or something, or gets offended easily. And oftentimes they go hand in hand, but not always. But essentially what it means is, like, if you're in a room, like, let's say I'm a highly sensitive person and you're not, and we're in the same room and there's music on, it's almost like I'm turning the volume to at its max for me, because I can hear that volume. I'm picking up on some small subtleties that not everybody can pick up on, where the majority of people aren't picking up on these little things. They're not affected by somebody's body language. Does this speak to you? Do you think that like you're maybe like a very high, like a sensitive person to your surroundings? Like if you're in a room and there's bright lights, do you think that that affects you more than somebody else?
Oh, totally. Like, my roommate, she's awesome, but she'll, at nighttime, she's a nighttime person. So she'll watch TV at nighttime and that's fine. But, like I'm ready to go to bed around like 10:30, 11, you know, I'm like winding down for the night. Like, I want to go to sleep. I have to go to sleep at a certain time. And she's done a really good job at kind of picking up on that and like knowing, you know, hey, okay. It's, you know, she knows my routine, but it's just like, she doesn't mind when all the lights are on in the house. And like, she doesn't mind, when there's a bunch of noise going on. And I'm like the complete opposite. Like everything has to be a certain way for me to go to sleep at night. Like, I don't like to be, I don't like there to be dishes in the sink when, you know, when I wake up in the morning, I want it to be nice and clean. You know what I mean? It's just like, everything has to have a certain, like, just like default at the end of the day. Like, okay, this goes here. This goes here. This has to be this way. Like I just everything. And I, take the same pills every single night, like my anti-anxiety, potassium, whatever, like, I'm so like structured in everything I do at nighttime, especially more than anything, just because I like to wake up feeling ready and set for the day. Like just routine is just the name of the game for me. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
I'm super sensitive to my environment.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that it's a very small population, but I think that there's more people than you might realize who fall under that category. Mm-hmm. And once you have identified yourself as that person, I'm not saying that you are, but if you do end up finding that you are this type of person, like I consider myself, it's very easy to identify the other small population that kind of is similar to you. Because you have this heightened sense of awareness,
right?
And picking up on some things that others might not be able to
right.
pick up.
And that makes it hard to like do things like study. My environment, my lighting in the room has to be a certain way for me to study. You know what I mean? It's just like every little thing is just has its purpose and has its place to go. Like has to be a certain way.
Yeah.
If not, it's just like, well, shit, I guess I better find something else to do because I can't fucking study. You know what I mean? It's just like I can't adapt. I think that's the issue is we have problems adapting. So that's why we do good on our own because we don't have to rely on other people. And
Absolutely.
10 out of 10, highly sensitive.
Yeah, I want to transition just a little bit because I think that this speaks to many women, especially younger women or even older women when they think back on their young childhood. You had made a post recently, the last few months, about your lifeguard days as a kid. And this was a very pivotal moment in your upbringing because up until this moment, you had not really thought about your body image.
Yeah.
Walk us through this story. How did it change your life? And I'm very, very fascinated to hear it straight from your mouth.
Yes. So in high school, maybe junior, senior year, like I did work as a lifeguard during the summers at our local water park. You know, it's just typical lifeguard uniform. It was just like a two-piece, nothing like crazy. It was just regular. But that's when I kind of started, you know, getting a lot of attention from males and things like that. And as other lifeguards, we would always compare ourselves to each other, like your waist is so small, blah, blah, blah. And I didn't really have a negative body image at that point. I don't think that started until college, but it's when I definitely became aware of myself and how I looked to other people. But I was fine with how I looked, if that made sense. But more so when I was in swimming, as a student athlete, I just vividly remember two certain situations. So one situation was I had come back from summer and I had put on a lot of weight that summer. I didn't care about what I ate. You know, I was lifeguarding that summer. Like we ate when we could, we ate what we wanted. Like it didn't matter. I was just enjoying life. And I came back for, I think it was my junior year. And my high school swim coach, I hope she's not listening to this, but she's probably not. But she said, wow, like you've packed on a good 10 pounds. And I was like, what? Like, She's like, you look a bit heavier. We need to get that off you. And I was like, well, fuck you. Why don't you get in the water and get some weight off of you, bitch? I didn't say that. And I didn't even notice that until she said something. Like, my mom didn't say anything. So I just let it go. You know, I'm sure I swam it off that year. And then my last swim meet as a senior, I remember, so we had two coaches. So we had one coach for our swimming. She was our main coach. And then we had another coach for our dry land, which was basically CrossFit, I guess you could say. Like, in the mornings, we'd do it like twice a week during season. It was brutal. It was not fun. Like, no. But I remember we were at our last swim meet, and my CrossFit coach basically said, like, you guys are going to have to find something after high school. Like, you've gone from all this endurance training and all these metabolically expensive sports to nothing. Like, you're going to have to find something after high school. And that instilled a sense of fear in me. That, I think, was probably the most pivotal point, and probably the, if I had to pick, probably the one thing that got me interested in weight training, because it was the end of the season. And that's when I had started weight training, was right after my senior swim season was over. Cause I was scared. I was like, I don't want to be that girl that puts on the freshman 15. Like, I want to go to college and look good. Like, I don't want to be that girl.
Right.
And so I wasn't, but I kind of went the complete opposite way, and I developed, you know, bulimia, nervosa, and all these other things. And, so yeah, fuck him too.
Right. And so you had mentioned, like, you know, you hope she's not listening to this, but fuck, I hope she is listening to this, because she needs to know the drastic impact on people's lives. Right? That a small comment that seemingly doesn't mean much or is in passing, you know, we make these comments all the time. I get people coming to me randomly, like saying, like, hey, that one time a month ago, or that one time a year, or 10 years ago, people that I run into from high school or whatever. And they say, like, it's one time you told me this thing, and it always stuck with me. And I always think about
it. Never forget.
And a lot of, most of the time, like, they're positive things, but every now and again, they might be some negative things. And so what are some things that you, as a woman who maybe has developed those insecurities, because I don't think that you're alone, I think that you are the majority. Mm-hmm. There's always that one thing that somebody says. What is your advice to coaches, mentors, teachers, parents listening who have young daughters or young kids in their life? How should they go about saying something? Like, let's just say, you know, you did gain a little bit of weight and it might not be the healthiest thing for you. Mm-hmm. How would you have liked that person to mention it to you, if that makes sense, right? Like, instead of saying, like, hey, you look fat, you got to lose weight, what are some ways that they could say it maybe a little bit more gently that would still have the same effect, just not that whole fuck you thing, right?
Like, yeah, right. See, and I don't think he was coming from a place of that. I think he was just, you know, trying to offer a piece of advice. But at the same time, what if someone that comes to you with that, and how would you take it? Especially as a teenager who's still trying to figure out who they are and who they want to be and how they appear to other people. Like, it's such a confusing time. Like, and chances are he or she most likely is already very aware of any negative weight gain that had happened over the course of a few months or whatever. You never know what someone's going through. They could have some hormonal issues. They could have relationship issues that are causing them to overeat. They could have an eating disorder. Like, your words, just tread very lightly, and ask them, first ask them if they'd be open to talking about it. Cause some people, like, they just don't want to talk about it, and you should respect that. I mean, I think as a parent, it's different because you're taking care of your child. Like, it is kind of your responsibility to be that overseer and that advisor. But I think as someone who's just like a friend or a mentor, I mean, you know, weight's a very touchy subject, especially for females. And you just have to be careful with what you say. And if you are going to say something, maybe follow up with some tips and advice instead of just criticism.
Right. Yeah. Some solutions to the potential quote unquote problem, if there even is a problem. No, I love that take on it. I work in a position where I am giving feedback almost daily, if not weekly, to people who I am supposed to be training to be better coaches. And a big part of it is the person who is receiving the feedback needs to be in a position to hear, accept, and digest the feedback. If you come out of left field saying, hey, you're fucked up, or hey, you got to do this better, and the person isn't ready to hear it, of course they're going to take it the wrong way.
Yeah.
And it's no different than, you know, a coach saying to their athlete, like, hey, you might need to lose 5 pounds in order to be a better athlete. You know, I like that suggestion of, hey, I have a piece of feedback for you. Are you interested in hearing it? You know what I mean? So that they're already in a mental state to where they're going to receive that feedback.
Yeah. And like asking them, hey, like, do you have something going on in your life right now? Are you in trouble? Do you need me to help you with this? Like, maybe try and help them first and then see if there's something that you don't know that's like untold that they're not telling you that you may want to factor into your fucking advice, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You never know what somebody, that's another thing that I've learned in my day to day, is that you just never know what somebody is going through.
Yeah.
At all. You don't know if their grandma just died, if they just got a divorce, if, you know, whatever, you know, you just don't fucking know. So to come at somebody, whether even if it's a 14-year-old, 15-year-old kid, they still need to be in a position to hear it. So I really enjoy that take. So let's just say you were in a position to, or a kid or somebody, anybody is in a position to receive this message that now they want to start transitioning and pivoting into some weight loss, and they want to take fitness a little bit more of a priority. You're really, really big on establishing and setting goals. Mm-hmm. What are some ways that somebody who is just starting out with their weight loss journey, what are some tips that you would give that person to help set realistic long-term goals for weight loss?
Right. I think longevity is probably the most important thing when it comes to weight loss. So if your goals for weight loss are short term, you're probably not going to do a very good job at keeping the weight off. So you really need to set goals that are going to be sustainable. First and foremost, if you're not adhering and if you're not able to adhere for a long period of time, that weight loss is, while it may happen, it may be very short-lived and you may rebound even worse coming off of it. But another thing is setting short goals, like little goals. Identify where you are, like where you're starting from, and then identify where you want to be and figure out that gray area in between, and not just going from the start to the finish, but rather going from the start to, okay, what's the next step? Set mini goals that are going to add up to that big goal. A lot of people set these giant goals, like I'm going to make 100K this year, and you know, and they just, that's not realistic for them that year. You know, it's just, some things are just not fucking realistic, no matter how bad you want it. Like, fuck, I want to be like Miss Olympia. Like, that's not going to have fucking happen this year. Like, or right. Even next year, maybe even 5 years. Like, I know that. So be realistic. Be honest with yourself. Just don't overextend yourself past what you know you can do with enough effort, but don't like sell yourself short and be like, I mean, set goals that are hard enough to where you challenge yourself, but not too challenging to where you're just going to give up because it's damn near impossible.
Mm-hmm.
So.
What about the why? Is there importance in the why behind the weight loss or the transformation? You've posted on social media about fitness goals and how it relates to self-love. Are there any red flags or pitfalls in somebody who maybe is wanting to shed a bunch of weight or gain a bunch of muscle because they hate themselves? Mm-hmm. And talk about that dichotomy of that love-hate relationship with fitness and nutrition and how somebody can navigate their way through that.
Yeah, totally. I've totally been in that position before. In fact, that's how a lot of people, including myself, start their fitness journeys, is out of a place of hatred and uncomfortableness. It's just, you really, really, really need to be secure with who you are as a person and where you're at in life without a competition prep. You need to be doing it from a place of self-love, because to be honest, once you reach that body fat, like I've been at extremely low levels of body fat and I still wasn't satisfied. You're never going to be satisfied. That's the whole point of bodybuilding and fitness, is constant improvement. There's never an end state for most people. I mean, it's lucky if you are that person. You are lucky if you're that person who's content with where they are at in their overall physique. But the majority of us are never content. We want more. So you just need to really, really be confident with who you are first before you embark on any type of physique transformation, because it may seem like, oh, I'll be happy once I reach this body composition. And not just with fitness, but like with money or, you know, life things, like I'll be happy once I move to this city. No, happiness is where you establish it. Happiness is where you decide you're going to be happy. You make that for yourself. And I think you're going to experience the most growth if you go from there instead of waiting to find that happiness somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah, I love it. I really do. Before I get into the final three questions, I want to touch on a post that you threw out there about a month ago, January 20th on Instagram, and I'm just going to quote it.
Very specific.
You talked about, this one stuck out to me big time because some of these things I do, and I wanted to just kind of get your take on it and what you meant by it, because I think other people can relate. So you had talked about fasting on Thanksgiving and Christmas. So here's what you said. You said, I fasted on Thanksgiving and Christmas to be able to enjoy those meals without gaining weight. Mm-hmm. I do extra cardio to offset a surplus. Mm-hmm. I have anxiety most times around free meals and meals that I don't know the exact macros for. And I ate 2 Rice Krispie treats past my macros.
Those are fucking good.
Fucking hella good, right? Past my macros, and I thought I had binged. Mm-hmm. It's not that these things are disordered inherently, but the thoughts I have around them are. So I think that, I mean, shit, that was like the advice I was giving people around the holidays, which was like,
yeah.
Hey, if you know you're going to fucking go crazy on Thanksgiving,
yeah,
skip a meal and then go crazy on Thanksgiving and have a great time and have zero guilt around it, right?
Exactly.
So, but you're talking about like the specific intent with the thoughts. So just kind of talk us through that.
So I guess I'll just use the fasting around the holidays as my first example. So so these are my demons right here laid out for you. But so for the holidays, you know, if you're approaching it with you still have goals in mind, like especially for someone who's in a competition prep, this is normal. You will probably, if you are able to enjoy that holiday meal, your coach probably will put you on the protocol to fast before Thanksgiving or fast afterwards, whatever. Do extra cardio. But the difference is that I am 6 weeks or 6 months at that point, 6 months post show. I shouldn't have to fucking worry about that. But that's the problem. I was stuck in that, like, that fear of gaining fat. That's a disordered behavior that is inherent. Like, that's just a bad thought to have when you aren't in that position to where you need to be like that. There was no reason that I should do that, especially for someone who's trying to put on size. That's just not going to fucking happen unless you're actually just like eating like an asshole, like stuffing your face. Like I can't eat like that anyways. Like I was full after one plate. Like I shouldn't have fasted anyways, 'cause I quit after like one plate. I was like, fuck, I feel cheated.
Right. So, I hate that. It's like, it's like when you refrain from alcohol, right? It's like, you want to get fucking hammered, but then you can only have one beer before
you good thing. You save a lot of money.
That is very true.
No, I'm the same way. I'm a lightweight. I take one drink and I'm like, all right, guys, goodbye. So that's a very disordered, behavior to fall into. And, I think the Rice Krispie thing, so that's not a binge. That is going over my macros maybe by 100 carbs, 10 grams of fat, So maybe like 500 calories over for one day. A binge, like, that's just overeating. A binge is an emotional induced large intake of calories. We're talking like 1,000, easily 1,000 plus over what you've already eaten for that day. So it's like I had felt the need to purge after I consumed two Rice Krispie treats, two. And they just like, what? No, that's not a binge. Like that's barely overeating. Like, but it's also in that state of like that emotional state that you're in when you binge. It also characterizes what a binge is. You feel like someone else is taking over your body. It's kind of like you can't control it. You feel like someone else is in your head telling you to eat these things. And like, you know, that it's bad and you know that it's wrong, but you literally cannot for the life of you, like, put the food down. Like, it's just like, I have to eat this. And that comes from restricting a lot. And that comes from that, you know, vicious cycle of binge, purge, restrict, that a lot of females deal with. So
now, yeah. So what kinds of things have you done since then? And what kinds of things would you recommend to somebody who is having these thoughts that you were having to help recognize not only that one, it's fucking disordered, right? But number two, how to reframe your mindset to realize that these things are quite normal and it's okay. It's just, how would you suggest somebody to help with this if it starts to become a problem?
So like if someone is dealing with, I don't want to overstep. I'm very careful about the advice I offer for, you know, eating disorders. I always think first and foremost, seek the help of someone who's licensed, but from someone who has dealt with it, just speaking from experience, part of what helps me is really taking a step back. That food might be in my hand that minute and I'm about to eat it, but it's just like, all right, remember how you feel after this is over. And that is the worst feeling in the world. And the sense of urgency that you have to get rid of that, either by excessive exercising or purging, whatever it may be, diuretics, those two feelings are the worst feelings in the world. And it's a sense of control, which is why I think most people deal with it. It's because it's one of the only things that they can control. The getting rid of that food, it provides a sense of control for a lot of people. But just like being very aware of what's going on is a huge thing. And just remembering those feelings that you know you're going to have if you continue to emotionally eat or whatever. And it's just like breathing, deep breathing, and being aware of your body in that moment really helps. Just it kind of brings to life the parasympathetic nervous system. Just relaxing. Just take a step back. Just remember that first bite tastes exactly like the last bite. There's really no difference. You know, take one bite. Okay, put it down. You know, it's going to taste the exact same the next time. So just little things like that. But always, first and foremost, if it's not something that you can fix, and if it keeps happening, go see someone, because it's just going to get worse. You cannot fix it yourself.
So. Absolutely. And that is hard for, not only it sounds like for you, but also many people have a hard time asking for help, feeling vulnerable, feeling like you don't have your shit together.
Embarrassing. Like no one wants to admit that they're putting all this food in their mouth and then going to the bathroom and fucking sticking their fingers down their throat, like shit. And then people are so quick to blame competitions and things like that. And I don't put any blame on competitions. I had these issues long before competing began. So it didn't come from a place of that, but just getting out of that mindset of perfectionism is a huge thing. You don't have to be perfect all the time. It's okay to go out and it's okay to have an extra drink that you didn't plan on having. Like it's not gonna ruin you. It's not the best thing for you, but you can always start over with the next meal, you know?
Right. Right on. Well, we're approaching our cap and I want to be respectful of your time. Okay. I want to get into the last three questions I ask everybody. Number one.
Play my Nintendo after this.
Say again.
So I'm probably just going to go play my Nintendo after this. So you're fine.
Oh, dude, you're going to need some emotional recharge, right? This is like highly stimulating for you. So you're going to need to zone out for a little bit.
Probably.
What do you tell yourself when you start getting discouraged?
Ooh, I don't think I talk to myself. I know my limits. So I let myself take a step back with the plan to approach it at a different angle next time. And that usually only applies to like school things or, you know, whatever. But when I'm in the gym, it's like, all right, we just got to get through this and then I can go about my day. Like, I don't give myself the option to just kind of peace out, you know? I would feel worse if I had quit in the middle of a workout if I was feeling discouraged or whatever. So it's just not an option for me. But with other things in life, I allow myself that mental space to realign. And I think that's really important for most people. It's you can only go so far as to where you're just going to have, you know, the law of diminished returns. You know, you're just not going to get anything out of shitty work. So just knowing when you're reaching that point is a huge thing.
Self-awareness is what I'm hearing. A lot of self-awareness.
Yeah.
Number two, what is your greatest fear and what are you doing to ensure it is no longer a fear of yours?
Oh gosh, this is a hard one. I would say letting myself down. So I set a lot of expectations for myself, which can be a good and a bad thing. And this actually does happen a lot and it really sucks. But yeah, when I let myself down, it's just like, oh, you're not hot shit. Like, you're not who you thought you were, you know? So letting myself down, letting other people down. And part of that kind of has its roots in my hypomanic states when I overcommit myself. So therefore I have to tell people like, hey, I'm in a really elated hypomanic state right now. Like, I need to come down, just give me some breathing space. So, letting myself down, letting other people down. I guess those would be the two biggest things.
Yeah. And what are you doing to ensure it's not a fear anymore?
Oh gosh. Just knowing that it's okay, I guess. I don't always have to be who I appear to be on Instagram. I don't always have to be like the perfectionist that is so dominant in me. It's okay to mess up. It's okay to screw up. Like, I'm a human. Like, just admit my vulnerabilities and admit when I fail is a huge thing. I'm really big about being truthful and honest and open on social media and not hiding, you know, when I have such as like binge moments or whatever, when I have moments of depression, like whatever it may be. That kind of takes the power out of it. It takes the power out of the fear. So, yeah.
I mean, it's just, again, it's another self-awareness answer, right? Yeah. Where like, you are just a human being. You are trying to do the best that you can and nobody's perfect and not everybody is exactly, you know, this perfect Instagram person. Right. And so, I think being easy on yourself and being self-aware is awesome.
Totally. Yeah. Instagram sucks. People are so blindsided on Instagram. Like, you know, their favorite person is probably on 6,000 different drugs. And it's like, You guys are just taking in all this shit and it's just, you don't even know half of it. Like, there's so much bullshit.
Yeah. I recently had a conversation with somebody who met one of their favorite Instagram people or something. And they were just like, fuck, he was not what I thought he was going to be.
No, they're not.
Like, it's kind of an asshole, you know? Like, but that's another topic of discussion that we could go down a whole huge rabbit hole and have a good time with it. But final one is, what is your porn name? That's your middle name followed by the street name that you grew up on.
So I can't just make one up.
No, this is a factual, this is an actual factual question. So like, it's like, and when I say street name, it's like the first street that you remember living on, right?
Okay.
That you can remember.
And then what else?
The first name is, it's your middle name followed by the street name that you grew up on.
Can I reverse it? It sounds so much better with the street first.
Go with both.
Okay. So the OG one, so my middle name is Kay. And the first street I grew up on is Marsha.
K. Marsha.
So I like Marsha K as my porn.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Marsha K does sound a whole hell of a lot better, right?
Exactly. So it's Marsha. Yeah. Let's
right
go
on.
With that. Catch Marsha. Me on the club.
There you go. Yeah. All right, Audrey. And where can people find you?
Okay, yeah, plug in. I am on Instagram primarily at Audrey K. Ross. K is spelled out, K-Y. No caps, no spaces. I always have to tell people that. So they're like, the letter K, and I'm like, no, K-A-Y. So Audrey K. Ross on Instagram. I am on Facebook, but I probably won't accept a friend request just because that's more of like my family place.
Right.
And I'm on LinkedIn if you guys are looking to hire a homie for a post-graduation job.
Fuck yes. I love LinkedIn, Audrey. It's easy.
Dude, I have been searching LinkedIn. That's like my new social media network, except like I'm supposed to be actually perfect on that one. So
yeah, if you're not on LinkedIn, you got to get on LinkedIn, man. It's like it's becoming a social media platform. It's
literally
not just a place to put your job resume.
Just to do their LinkedIn profile as like a social media internship. And he was a really awkward person. I declined the offer. So, that's probably why he couldn't do it himself. Just because he was
right.
He's not listening either.
So, excellent.
Step on a lot of toes. Anyways.
All right. Well, thank you, Audrey, for your time. I know that a lot of these things were very difficult to talk about openly, and there were some very deep stuff. And I appreciate your vulnerability, your honesty, and willingness to just lay it all out there.
Dude, totally. Anytime.
Awesome. Thanks, Audrey.
All right. See you later.
Thank you guys for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. If Audrey's message spoke to you and reminded you of somebody who you think needs to hear that same message, do them a huge favor. Share this episode with them. Remember, you never know what impact that may have on that person's life. If you want to continue to support Audrey and her mission, follow her on Instagram. Her handle is at Audrey K. Ross. Remember, the K is spelled out, K-A-Y. How? I got tons of soul on my true collectible. Famous, so famous, number one, desirable. Out of what I want, when I want, and how I want it.